Call this meeting to order. The Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors, please rise for a salute to our flag.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Is there any significance? Okay, we will start our meeting today with a presentation on Red Ribbon Week. We have a
Good morning, Chairman DeMartini and fellow supervisors. My name is Kate Trompeter. I'm here today representing the Stanislaus County Citizens Against Substance Abuse Committee. We sponsor the Red Ribbon Week activities every year. And today we're here to recognize those schools that were selected as first, second, and third place winners in our Best Decorated School Contest. Before I get into acknowledging our schools, I did want to tell you just a little bit about the Red Ribbon Committee. We are a community-based nonprofit, and our main purpose is really just to raise awareness and educate young people in our community about substance abuse issues in Stanislaus County. So Red Ribbon Week happens nationally every year. It's an opportunity for us to engage young people, like the young people that are here and the rest of their schools, in education and awareness. Every school in the county is given an opportunity to participate in the Best Decorated School Contest. And what typically happens is that they're supported by an adult advisor, and the rest of the efforts, all the planning and organization of the events that take place at their school is all led by young people, which I think makes some of these things truly unique. Once the week begins, they're visited by one of our committee members who acts as a judge, and then we meet and we deliberate and make the very difficult decision of choosing first, second, and third place winners in the elementary, junior high, and high school categories. During the week, they put on different events like themed days. They invite guest speakers. They also put together portfolios. And if you'll humor me, I just wanted to show you a couple that we brought with us so you guys can just take a look at some of the things that they did throughout the week. So before I recognize our winners, I'd also like to mention the schools that participated that did not place this year. We'd like to recognize them as honorable mention recipients. That is Fox Road Elementary School, University Charter School, Wakefield Elementary School, Walter Brown Elementary School, Blaker Kinzer Middle School, Teal Middle School, Glick Middle School, Mark Twain Middle School, Waterford High School, Ceres High School. Excuse me one second. And Denier High School. This year we had 20 participants, which is really wonderful. It takes time and it takes money and a lot of effort to put this week together. We also would like to just mention that in addition to all the schools that decided to participate, of the schools that we chose as first, second, and third place winners, we have really excellent representation from all over the county, as you'll see when we announce our winners, which we think is also very important. So, okay. Here we go. As I recognize your school, would you have a representative from your school or whoever you've identified? If it's all of you, that's fine too. Come up to receive your plaque, and we'll start with our third place schools. So our third place school in the elementary school division was Houston Elementary School. Is Houston Elementary School here? Yay. Very nice job, Houston Elementary School. Our third place winner in our middle school category was Savage Middle School. Is Savage here? Excellent. Yeah. Savage. Thank you, Savage Middle School. And our third place winner in our high school division was Oakdale High School. Is Oakdale here? Okay, well, it looks like Oakdale couldn't join us this morning, so we'll clap for them in their absence. Okay, and now on to second place. Our second place winner in our elementary school was Cunningham Elementary Schools. Cunningham, come up. Okay, and in our middle school, Waterford Middle School was our second place winner. Is Waterford here? Okay, well, we'll just make sure that they get all the things that they get for placing second. So, and in our high schools, it was Houston High School. Is Houston High School here? Look a little young.
Very young high school student.
Yeah, I know. There.
Well, that is the mayor of Houston giving out that award too.
Excellent job. Okay, and now for our first place schools. Our first place school in our elementary schools was Enslin Elementary School. Excellent job, Enslin Elementary School. Photo ops, very important. Okay, and our first place school in our middle schools was Hanshaw. And while Hanshaw is collecting their plaque and their certificate, I just want to mention that we're really impressed with all the schools every year. They really do an excellent job. Hanshaw especially overcame some particular barriers with this, you know, it's Red Ribbon Week. Red's not necessarily a color that they can use at their school, so they did everything in orange. They didn't let any of these barriers that they sometimes have get in the way of really educating their students and creating some awareness on their campus, so it was just really, really nice to see what they had been able to put together. And our first place school in our high schools was Downey High School. And I believe that Downey was undergoing some construction, and they were able to still decorate their school despite the construction. So yeah, big round of applause for all of our schools. So I see that we actually have a couple of our committee members here, and I just want to acknowledge them before I wrap things up. So if you're on the committee, well, Ramon Bawanan is already standing, but Jeff and anybody else I'm not seeing, if you're on the committee, go ahead and stand. We have really excellent representation on our committee from all throughout the county, different agencies, community members. It's, I think, a really special group of people who really want to make a difference. And certainly we all recognize that drug and alcohol abuse is a crucial issue for our community. As somebody who works in prevention, I subscribe to the idea that you can't take a changed individual and put them in an unchanged environment. And I really believe that these schools, the 20-plus of them that decided to participate in Red Ribbon Week, took a very important step in changing the culture and the environment of their community when they're at school. And that just creates young people who are wiser and more educated and can make better choices. So I really commend you. We all commend you for having participated in that. So. Thanks very much for allowing us to do this today. And again, congratulations to all the schools, and I guess we'll see you next year.
Hey, thank you for your presentation. At this time, we will go to the public comment period for those people who want to speak on an item that is not on the agenda. I have one request to speak, a Deborah Harper.
Good morning. My name is Deborah Harper. Good to see you again. Hope you had a good Thanksgiving. Thank you. What I'm about to say is not planned, so I'm just in prayer as I speak. I've been attempting to establish a peaceful path. We have a wonderful community, and we have a lot of neat things in the community. There are a few things that fall in the cracks that sometimes we have to deal with, and I'm trying to do that without tainting the good part, you know, and without insulting anybody or offending anybody, but unfortunately some facts may be offensive, so that is not my intent to offend anybody. We just elected Barack Obama, which is the first black president, and that's a milestone, and it's awesome. Therefore, other trends have started. Mayor Kevin Johnson in Sacramento. We just hired another black employee at the Alliance WorkNet in town. I don't know if you know that. It's awesome. One of the things that I've come in contact with is the discrimination as a woman. And somebody's telling me at this point in life that I can't have a reasonable lifestyle because I've taken a conservative stand and I'm sticking to my values, and I don't want to compromise my values in the process of establishing the peaceful path. I do this in prayer every day. I'm a human being, so if you see me frustrated, I apologize. This is unreasonable. And I walk through halls, and this is one of the tools that is used throughout the community to attempt to humiliate a human being. Now, my request is that we can set a standard, keep a peaceful path, and get rid of this kind of thing in the community completely. I do not have substance abuse problems. I do not have mental health problems. This is a clear miscommunication, lack of communication. The worst thing I ever was guilty of was being naive. That does not have to be a problem forever. So, and the process of establishing this peaceful path, I ask that everyone can think throughout the holiday about treating each other as human beings. And if spoken to as directly as I have to speak in some areas, it's, again, not to offend anybody. I'm in prayer about what I'm doing, and God willing that he'll give me the words to say without offending anybody. This is not something I can formulate into a PowerPoint presentation. All I can do is continue to write correspondence. Recently, there was an article in the Modesto Bee that one of the departments, the head of the department, said that if his employees complained, maybe they should find another job because they wouldn't fit into the department. I responded peacefully by email that as individuals, we're all on this planet in the community. And in each department, we are the department, we are the community as individuals. We don't have to fit. We should be able to be on the planet and exist on the planet without having to cater to a specific criteria other than the reasonable criteria to get along and to function in the community. We should be able to disagree with each other and work through our differences as human beings and as adults that we are. And I just thank you for your time. Chris.
Hey, thank you for your comments. Is there anyone else from the audience who would like to speak to the board on an item that is not on the agenda? Okay, seeing none, we will move to the consent calendar. Does any member of this board wish to pull an item from the consent calendar? Okay, seeing none, I will entertain a motion.
So moved.
Okay, motion's made by Supervisor Monteith, seconded by Supervisor Grover to approve the consent calendar. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried 4-0. Seeing that it is 9:15, we will move to the Stanislaus County Redevelopment Agency agenda. We'll call this meeting to order. We have a consent calendar. Anybody wish to pull anything from the consent calendar? If not, I will entertain a motion for that.
So move. Second.
A motion made by Supervisor Grover, seconded by Supervisor O'Brien. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion carried 4-0. Okay, we have no correspondence. No informational items. And no public hearing. Okay, we will move to agenda item 7B.
Yes, good morning. Kirk Ford, your interim executive director of the Redevelopment Agency. With me is Nancy Brown, who will provide you with our yearly financial audit and fiscal analysis for the agency.
Thank you. Good morning, agency members. Redevelopment law requires every agency to present a financial report to its legislative body within 6 months of the end of the agency's fiscal year. The county's internal audit division has conducted the required program and fiscal audits, which are attached to your report. Financial highlights of the 2007-08 fiscal year include total agency revenues were $7.8 million. Housing fund revenue was $308,000, and the set-aside transfer was $2.6 million. Total net assets increased by $5.2 million. Other highlights include the construction of Phase 2 of the Keys Project. The infrastructure project will begin shortly. The agency also continues to pay debt obligations on Bret Harte Sewer Project, Salida Storm Drain Project, and the Keys Storm Drain Project. The audit summarizes that the agency is in positive financial health, in part due to our ongoing conservative approach, a 14% increase in incremental property taxes, an increase in investment income. Now, suffice it to say that our current fiscal year may not be quite as rosy due to our economic downturn, but what we will do is monitor the situation closely so that we can protect our assets and keep the programs we have in line going. They may be slowed down a little bit. We'll have to wait and see, but we will be watching it closely. But this past fiscal year, we've had a very healthy year. The second part of this report is the agency activities report. The agency continues to partner with various agencies and county departments to accomplish common goals and programs. Under housing activity, the agency continued a down payment assistance program, a minor and major housing rehab program. The agency has also partnered with Habitat for Humanity to purchase 6 homes and rehab 4 in the airport neighborhood. The agency participated in 6 community cleanups in Salida, Bret Harte, 2 in the airport neighborhood, Keys, and Empire, removing over 308 tons of garbage and 2,500 tires. Today we have with us Steve Sheffield. He's here from the auditor's office should you have any questions about the audit. At this point, we're asking the agency to accept both reports and forward them to the Board of Supervisors.
Any questions from the board?
No.
Okay. Seeing none, was there a motion to accept the financial report?
So moved.
Okay, motion's been made by Supervisor O'Brien.
Second.
Seconded by Supervisor Grover. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? Okay, motion's carried 4-0. Thank you for your report. Okay, we will move now to agenda item B6, the approval to accept the Stanislaus County Children's Commission annual report.
Good
Good morning, members of the board, CEO Mr. Rick Robertson, County Council Mr. John Doring. Thank you for the opportunity to share with you on behalf of the Stanislaus County Children's Council. My name is Cheryl Heppner, and I am the coordinator for the Children's Council. The Stanislaus County Children's Council is a working group of professionals and community members dedicated to fostering collaboration and advocating for effective services for children and their families. The Stanislaus County Children's Council was appointed by the Stanislaus County Board of Supervisors on February 4, 1992. There are currently 33 members on the Children's Council. The Standing Committee of the Children's Council, the Executive Committee, are voted in by council members and oversee the business of the council. I would like to introduce the Executive Committee at this time and have them stand as I do so. Chair, Dick Jacobs, Executive Director, Valley Mountain Regional Center. Unfortunately, Dick was unable to be here with us today. Chair-elect Jill Silva, Chief Deputy Probation Officer, Juvenile Hall. Vice Chair Jan Viss, Assistant Director, Community Services Agency, Child and Family Services Division. Past Chair Carol Shipley, Assistant District Attorney. I would like to extend my appreciation and thank you to them, as it is a great privilege of mine to work with all four of these outstanding professionals. The purpose of the council is to advocate for and support the interests of all children and families. Information sharing at the meetings is beneficial for strengthening collaborative between various departments and community organizations which make up the council membership. This allows the opportunity to expose any gaps in services that exist, and members work together through the respective agencies to fill in those gaps. The Children's Council has also worked to foster collaboration through various presentations at council meetings. One of the goals of the Children's Council is to produce a Condition of Children and Youth report to heighten community awareness regarding the condition of children and youth in Stanislaus County. In October, the Condition of Children and Youth Report 2008 was released. Special thanks go to the Modesto Bee, the Turlock Journal, and the Ceres Courier for publishing articles regarding the report and assisting in our effort to inform the community as to the condition of our children and youth. The results of the report are as follows. Child poverty. As stated in the Stanislaus County Community Health Assessment 2008 report, the federal poverty level is a measure of income insecurity and is used to determine income eligibility for many public aid programs. The population living below 100% of the federal poverty level is considered to be in poverty. Comparatively, the number of people living below 300% of the federal poverty level is a common measure of insufficient income in California, where the cost of living is very high. In California, people living at 300% of the federal poverty level begin to qualify for public aid programs. Also obtained from the Stanislaus County Community Health Assessment 2008 report are public assistance participation statistics that reflect current economic conditions taking place within our community. Public assistance can come in the form of both cash and non-cash benefits. Benefits include programs such as CalWORKS, Cash Aid Welfare, Child Care Assistance, Food Stamps, and Medi-Cal. Child Health. Teen birth rate amongst girls 10 to 14 years of age has decreased significantly between 1995 and 2006, both in the county and at the state level. The infant mortality rate in our county hasn't changed significantly between 1995 and 2007, and has been consistently higher than the state infant mortality rate during this time period. Several programs and projects are being coordinated by the Health Services Agency with funding through the Stanislaus County Children and Families Commission, Healthy Birth Outcomes Program, and the Safe Sleeping Campaign. Both of these projects work through partnerships with many county agencies. Currently, the Stanislaus County Immunization Coalition, a partnership of public health, healthcare, education, and community organizations and individuals is working to improve the immunization rate in our county. Child care. The number of child care facilities are broken down by type. This data was obtained from the Stanislaus County Office of Education, Child Care Resource and Referral Program. 30,720 is the amount that two people earning minimum wage would earn in 1 year. The cost of child care would be approximately 21% of their total income. Need for subsidized child care is the percent of preschool-aged children on the Stanislaus County Centralized Eligibility List hoping to receive help in paying for their child care. Need for preschool programs represents the approximate number of four-year-olds that are not enrolled in a state or federally funded preschool program. Child abuse and neglect. Initial child abuse reports means an unduplicated count of children who had a report of abuse or neglect during the reporting period. This means that children were only counted one time during the year, even if they had multiple referrals. It includes all referrals that were evaluated out, not investigated, and those that were investigated. Percentage of child abuse reports substantiated means the number of substantiated reports of abuse or neglect divided by the total number of reports received during the analysis year. A substantiation is an indication that the abuse and or neglect did in fact occur. Children in foster care is an average count of how many youth were in an out-of-home placement out of their parents' care for 8 days or more at any point throughout the analysis year. Children in care for 8 days or less are excluded based upon standards set by UC Berkeley. Adoption within 24 months of entering foster care is a count of how many youth discharged from care during the analysis year were adopted within 24 months of the initial removal from their parents' or guardians' care. Juvenile crimes and delinquency. Statistics for 2008 reflect a slight increase in juvenile crime. More youth were arrested and booked into the juvenile hall than the previous year. Although felony crimes increased, so did the number of youth that were diverted from the criminal justice system. We were unable to gather reliable information regarding the number of documented juvenile gang members. Therefore, this number is not available for 2008. Community service hours completed by juveniles is a new statistic being gathered for the report. Education. More students enrolled in school in 2007 than in 2006. Even though some districts are in declining enrollment, overall enrollment remains the same. The expulsion rates have gone up because many districts have a no-tolerance policy that is enforced. The number of after-school programs has increased because of the efforts of our Stanislaus County Office of Education's grant writing expertise. Over $24 million in additional funds was secured to increase capacity at school sites, and four new high schools were added to the after-school programs. Stanislaus County Office of Education Prevention Programs will continue to write competitive grants until all of the schools are funded. The bad news is that students are dropping out at an alarming rate. The Stanislaus County Office of Education recognizes this and has put together a team to look at it. Two summits are scheduled for the next year to address this problem. One is for students only, and one will be for the community. The hope is, collaboratively, solutions will be found to keep students in school. Goals for 2009. The Stanislaus County Children's Council will continue to meet to exchange information and strengthen collaborative between county and community organizations. In addition to meeting, the Children's Council plans to complete the Condition of Children and Youth Report 2009, keeping the community informed of the problems facing children and youth today. On behalf of the Stanislaus County Children's Council, thank you for your support and dedication to providing a safe and healthy community and for allowing us the opportunity to share with you today. We now ask you to accept the Stanislaus County Children's Council Annual Report 2008 to the community.
That was quite a detailed report. Supervisor Monteith, you're on this commission.
Yes. It's been a privilege to participate in the Children's Council. It, you know, as we recognize the deterioration of a family unit, our challenge becomes greater and greater. But having the opportunity to be on the council and see those people who are involved in the various departments is truly refreshing, and also the people that attend and are involved. It's not a job. It comes from the heart. You have to be a special, gifted person, in my opinion, in addressing these challenges. And I will say at this time, all of you on the council fit that category. So it's not only that you're performing the service and the duties that's needed, but it's a want to, not a have to. And I want to commend all of you for your contribution. Also, you know, you could name the child poverty, health care, shaking baby syndromes, all of the various things that you participate in. The one that I have, well, let me put it this way. The poster work that you have the children do, the drawings to depict from their eyes what's going on, I think is one of the most show-telling of all the things we do. You give them the opportunity to express what they see and what they live in, which none of us, I think, can put ourselves into their body and go through the experience. I think that is one of the most revealing programs that you have, and truly is an insight. And it also allows them to come out with a true feeling of art and expression. We are not all gifted with being able to write or speak words. But you can take a pen, a color crayon, or something, and express your true feeling. So once again, I want to thank you. You've done an outstanding job. The challenge is daunting, I know that, but I do believe in Stanislaus County we do have the people, the right people, in the right places to address the challenge, and I just want to thank you for that. Thank you.
Okay, I just had a few comments. There's certainly good and bad in the report, though. I'm glad to see the teen birth rates are dropping, and the adoption rates seem to be surprisingly good, which I'm glad to see. I was curious about the immunization rate decline, because we have sufficient money for child immunization through our Prop 10 commission. Do you have any, can you give us any insight why that's, the rate has dropped and it's down to 66%? That should be at 100%.
I'm going to have Nancy answer that, who is here.
Nancy Fisher, I'm Assistant Director at the Health Services Agency with Public Health. And the immunization rate that we put in this is the rate of immunizations for children at the age of 2 as reflected in our immunization registry. And it, the number down is a small percentage point. The Prop 10 funding that we have goes towards putting the data into the registry, not particularly to giving the immunizations. And that's why the Immunization Coalition is working with the community to get the word out. Immunizations are a parental choice, and helping families to understand the importance of immunizations in preventing childhood illness. The interesting thing is that by the time children get to school, we're closer to 100%. There's still families that make a choice not to immunize their children. It's the age between 0 and 2 when families may not be keeping up to date, but they do get them immunized by the time they're ready for school. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, well, that answers my question for immunization. So the only ones of concern that I have are, you know, the dropout rate and the arrest rate seem to be going up, so that is disappointing. But there's good news and bad news in any report. We do appreciate all the good work that you do, though. We hope the statistics improve every year. Is there further comments from board members? Okay, seeing none, there's a motion to accept the report.
So moved. Second.
Okay, motion made by Supervisor Monteith and seconded by Supervisor O'Brien to accept the Children Council Annual Report. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed? Motion's carried 4-0. Thank you for your report. Okay, we will move now to agenda item B7, transfer the Modesto Courthouse.
Yes, it is a pleasure to come to you this morning with what we believe is very good news, and that is that we have been successful in working with the Stanislaus County Courts and State Administrative Office of the Courts in brokering an agreement that will lead to the transfer of the Modesto Main Courthouse and Hall of Records. For your information, as of December 3rd, 2008, 281 court facilities out of 534 statewide have been transferred, which is only about 53%. We're excited because we'll be in that group that won't be subject to additional fines and penalties. This transfer that we'll be presenting to you today is the final and most complicated of our court facilities transfers. There's some people that are very important to recognize who have been involved in the transfer discussions for several years. And first, sitting at the dais here, Tim Fedorchek, who has master planned and masterminded much of what you've had come before you up to this point and what you'll see today. Eileen Melson, who we brought out of retirement to work beside Tim and help us navigate through what is a very complex process. Marnie Artis, Terry Rain, Dean Wright, Jim Quartz, Monica Nino, Patty Hill Thomas, and our support staff, and also the courts who have worked side by side with us in partnership to develop an agreement that that all could support, specifically Judge Jacobson, who is the facilities coordinator, judge responsible in Stanislaus County Courts and has done just an outstanding job. Linda Romero-Souls, who is with us this morning. Good morning, Linda. And Mike Tozzi, the court executive officer, who's been involved in this process for some time now as well. Our thanks to all who have worked through this very complex and difficult process, and I will defer to Tim for a presentation.
Great. Mr. Vice Chair and members of the board, good morning, and thank you. The court's transfer, this sounds awful loud, this mic. The court's transfer action before you provides for the transfer of responsibility for the funding and operation of the trial court facilities from the counties to the California Judicial Council Administrative Office of the Courts. The Act, the Trial Court Facilities Act of 2002 and its related legislation that passed also have enacted this measure to move the primary responsibility for trial court facilities from the counties to the state as the third branch of state government. The court facility transfers are negotiated on a building-by-building basis and ultimately with the goal to transfer the fee title to the state whenever possible, understanding that in the cases of joint use facilities, such as our downtown Modesto facilities, that the equity interests for both the state and the county must be preserved in this transfer process. The county is not entitled to compensation for the actual equity in the building or the portion of the building that's occupied by the courts and transferred to the state. But once the responsibility for the court facility is transferred, the state has the obligation to provide for all new courts facilities, and that's the real carrot, if you will, to the county, is that from this point forward, having transferred our facilities, any new growth in the courts for the rest of time will be the responsibility of the state. In exchange for that consideration, a county facilities payment is established to be paid by the county in partial exchange for relief from that responsibility to provide for the growth in facilities. The state and county agreed to toll the original legislative deadline of September 30th, 2008, by delaying a 2.4% penalty on that county facility payment until December 31 of this year. So we're meeting that by this action today. Execution of these agreements will assure that we meet that deadline. This is the fifth and will be the final facility to transfer from the state. Previously, in July 31st of 2007, we assigned the lease, which is our only leased facility, to be transferred to the state. That was for traffic court on Floyd Avenue in Modesto. The series court building transferred in June 24th of 2008, and then a little bit later this year, in September 16th, we transferred both the Turlock Court and the juvenile courts located at the Juvenile Justice Center. So the subject of our discussion this morning is really the Modesto Main Courthouse and Hall of Records, and we've left the best for last. The downtown facility, as most of you probably know, is located between H and I Street, 11th and 12th Street. The building, the property, that entire city block, is one piece of property at the present time. That contains the total 109,000 square foot main Modesto Courthouse and Hall of Records building, as well as you can see on the exhibit before you, the county's downtown jail project and a small modular facility that houses the county's capital projects division. What's being proposed is that the single parcel in downtown Modesto is divided into four parcels, where the county retains two of those parcels and two of the parcels are transferred to the state of California. Parcel A is what is commonly known as the courthouse lawn, would become a county park and retain under the county's ownership. Parcel B would be the county's jail and the sallyport that serves the jail. Parcel C is the actual, what I'll call the footprint of the Hall of Records and the main Modesto courthouse property. And then parcel D is the secure parking lot. Parcels C and D, the parcels under the courts building and the secure parking lot, would transfer then to the state of California. Parcels A and B retained by the county. You can tell I was a model builder once upon a time. This is an exploded view of our courthouse, looking at both the courthouse and the Hall of Records building. It's a five-level building, a basement and four upper levels. The area shown in light blue in this exhibit really represents a space that is the exclusive use space of the courts in the building. That is, out of that 109,435 square feet, it's a total of 85,000 square feet approximately, or 77.8% of the building. The county occupies and will have interest in 24,271 square feet, or about 22.18% of the building. So that includes, in the yellow on that exhibit, you'll see the corridors and elevators, those kinds of things are the proportionate distribution of the shared use areas within the building. Then those numbers, those percentages, become important because that's how essentially all the maintenance and operating costs are then divided between the county's portion of the county's occupied space and the court's occupied space. As I mentioned earlier, there's an annual county facilities payment that's required. That facilities payment's based on the average annual operations and maintenance cost, as was actually calculated between 1995 and 2000, and then it's escalated to the current value. That calculates out to $445,670 annually. There's a one-time adjustment to that number that occurs at the end of this fiscal year. And then once that number is adjusted once, it's fixed forevermore. It's non-escalating into the future, but is due by the county in quarterly payments. The county then would transfer operations to the state We picked a date this time as opposed to having a floating date where we did in some of the previous ones. We picked December 22nd, 2008 as being the date of the actual transfer of responsibility. So the state becomes, when we say transfer of responsibility, that means that the state becomes responsible for the maintenance and operations of all the court's occupied space and the common areas within the building. As I mentioned earlier, parcels C and D would transfer to the state, but only after approval by the State Public Works Board. And so there's some work to get all the title documents in order to prepare for that. That can happen after the transfer of responsibility. The county retains what's called an equity right to 24,271 square feet in the space, but because the state is the majority occupant, the court is the majority occupant in the facility, the state would have the right to buy the county out of its equity, space in the future by appraising that value and then paying the value of that space plus the relocation costs. The county retains the liability for earthquake-related damage, but only in the Hall of Records portion of the building, not in the main courthouse. And that's because, per the provisions of Senate Bill 10 that were passed, the county retains liability in any building that the state engineer evaluated as having a seismic risk level of greater than 4. So in this case, it was 5 for the Hall of Records, but it was rated 4 for the main courthouse building. I don't know if it's worthy of explanation here, but the Hall of Records building was originally constructed in 1938. The main Modesto Courthouse building was constructed in 1962, a different set of codes. In terms of the use of the space, the county space, the sheriff's jail staff locker room and associated space remains in the basement of the courthouse. The district attorney currently occupies the entirety of the fourth floor, but the plan would be to vacate approximately half of that space once the completion of the fifth floor remodel of the building across the street, their district attorney's new office at 12th Street building, is completed. So the district attorney would remain in about half of the fourth floor of the Hall of Records. The public defender keeps a small office in the basement of the main courthouse, and then of course the sheriff's court security unit occupies space that will actually be court space that is provided for the purpose of court security functions. The Superior Court has also requested use of about 16,114 square feet of the county space in the Hall of Records. The state will bill the county for maintenance and operations of the county space, and then per whatever agreement we reach with the Superior Court for use of the county's equity space in the building, we would pass that cost along to the court. The county would continue to maintain the court-occupied 8,164 square feet. Did I say that right? The county would continue to maintain the county-occupied. That would be the balance of the space, that the county equity space that the county continues to occupy. So the county would then enter agreements with the court for that space in the Hall of Records, and also for the family law court at the 801 11th Street building, and for a couple of very small offices for court reporters at the Juvenile Justice Center. So the impact of this transfer agreement would be that the state has elected to contract out maintenance through the state rather than to use county maintenance services. The result of that will mean that the county's space inventory will decrease by about 101,000 square feet, and a reduction of force of 4 maintenance positions will be necessary. Of those 4 positions, 2 are vacant and 2 are filled. The reduction would become effective on January 17, 2009, and that's due to existing labor agreements that are affected. The other related actions necessary through this transfer would be the authorization to approve and record the record of survey to divide that single piece of property into the 4 pieces of property. And the county must also clear 2 existing encumbrances on that property due to previous county borrowings. So that would occur over some time as well. The after the record of survey is recorded, we would then ask that the chairman be asked to sign the grant deed conveying parcels C and D to the state of California. So our recommendations are as follows. Number one, to authorize, and I'll just paraphrase these if this is okay. They're very long in the agenda item. The number one recommendation would be to authorize the vice chairman of the Board of Supervisors to execute the transfer agreement and the joint occupancy agreement and the closing documents in order to complete the transfer of responsibility for the properties. Number two, to authorize the county's surveyor through the County Public Works Department to approve and record the record of survey that will divide the property. Recommendation number three is to direct the auditor controller to make quarterly installments on the county facility payment associated with the transfer at approximately $445,670 annually. Number four, to authorize a reduction in force of two filled positions and two vacant positions with the General Services Agency Facilities Maintenance, effective January 17, 2009. And number five, to amend the salary and position allocation resolution to reflect those changes. Number six, to authorize the chairman of the Board of Supervisors to sign the grant deed for conveyance of the Modesto Courthouse and Hall of Records, once approved by the State Public Works Board. Number seven, to authorize the chief executive officer to finalize and execute agreements with the Superior Court for the use of space as previously described. Number eight, to authorize the chief executive officer to execute any other documents necessary to complete the transfer upon approval of the to form by the county council. And finally, number nine, to find that all these recommended actions are exempt from the provisions of the California Environmental Quality Act, or CEQA as we know it. And with that, I'm happy to answer any questions, and I'll leave up on the screen for us a picture of the original county building and courthouse that was built in downtown Modesto on that in the center of that block in the 1800s. So with that, I'm happy to entertain any questions.
Supervisor O'Brien.
Just one quick question. If the state buys the county out of that equity right position, does the annual fee that's charged to us change?
No, the annual county facilities payment fee will be fixed forevermore at this point. And that's really recognition of what the county's responsibility has been historically to this point. It's then fixed by the State Department of Finance, which has reviewed and approved this county facilities payment, and that won't change at any point in the future. But that added an interesting complexity to this agreement. What happened was, because the Hall of Records building, ultimately I'm sure a lot of you have heard about the courts, the AOC's plan to eventually build new courts facilities in downtown Modesto. It's anticipated that the first phase of that project would require the state to buy the county out of its portion of space in the Hall of Records and renegotiate the property terms in order to build that first phase of a new building. And because of that, what we did was we are suggesting coming to an agreement with the local court to use the county space in the Hall of Records, because if we didn't do that, we would have had to have transferred the entire Hall of Records to the state of California, which would have increased that county facility payment forevermore. So we're hoping that we're making a wise move by reducing our obligation over the rest of time.
Okay, Mr. Robinson.
Yes, just one additional point that I'd like to identify as we move forward with this process is that this will result in a reduction in force in our General Services Agency as a result of the courts moving to a different maintenance agreement. And at this time I wanted to identify and express my appreciation to GSA and their continued diligence through the transition process. Also to Jody and Brandy in our Human Resources Department for the work that they're doing to identify ways to mitigate the impact of the employees that will be affected as a result of the reduction in force.
And Mr. Fedorchak, perhaps you could explain to the public why our Child Support Court Department 16 is not part of this agreement.
And I may call on Linda to also help me as well. The Family Law Court was originally provided as a program to the court, as opposed, when we started the transfer process, originally we believed that the Department 16 Family Law Court would be part of the transfer process, but as we subsequently learned, because that was funded actually by a grant originally, and is considered to be a program of the court, then that the AOC, ultimately the Administrative Office of the Courts, came back to us and said that we don't have the responsibility to transfer that courtroom specifically. We will, as part of this action, however, want to negotiate an agreement for ongoing occupancy of space for the Department 16 court. And I don't know if the court has anything to add to that, but that's in essence the reason why it's not included.
No, because originally we were expecting that to be part of the agreement. This is certainly a very complex agreement. It's from the material that's been submitted in the agenda. Every floor has a different part of the state and the county. The parcels are split up from the lawn to the jail, common areas, and the Hall of Records. Really appreciate the staff's work on this and an extremely complex agreement. I will remind this board that it takes a unanimous vote to pass this. Otherwise, Mr. Fedorchek may have to check into the mental health department if we reject this. Okay.
I could accept that as a recommendation as well.
Okay. Further comments from the board?
Motion to approve all 9 staff recommendations.
Seconded.
Okay. Motion's made by Supervisor O'Brien and seconded by Supervisor Monteith to accept the 9 staff recommendations to transfer the courthouse to the state. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion's carried. Good work, Mr. Fedorchek. You've done a great job on that. Courthouse now belongs to the state. Oh, Linda, would you like to say something?
Good morning, Board of Supervisors and Ms. Robinson and Mr. Doring. As Mr. Fedorchek mentioned, this is a historical day for the county and for the courts. We wanted to publicly acknowledge and thank Mr. Robinson and the CEO staff for their help and the Building Works Department. And we received word that our county is slated to get 8 new courtrooms under the Peralta Bill, SB 1407, that'll start in 2011 and 2012, and we look forward to our continued working relationship with the county on this project. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you. Yes, I think probably someday we'll be talking about a courthouse at the county jail someday. It certainly would make things a lot more efficient. But that's for a future discussion. Okay, we will move to the correspondence.
This board has received a letter from the Governor's Office of Emergency Services regarding the U.S. Small Business Administration's declaring of Stanislaus County as a contiguous county as a disaster area due to the economic impacts caused by dry lightning wildfires that occurred June 8, 2008 through August 20, 2008.
Referred to the Agricultural Commissioner, Sealer of Weights and Measures, and the Stanislaus Economic Development and Workforce Alliance.
This board has received a copy of Navigating the Currents, a guide to California's public mental health system from Eli Lilly and Company.
Referred to the Behavioral Health and Recovery Services.
This board has received a letter from the California Department of Parks and Recreation regarding the Statewide Park Development and Community Revitalization Act of 2008. Statewide Park Program, a new grant program that will award funds to critically underserved communities for the creation of new parks and facilities.
Refer to the Department of Parks and Recreation.
This board has received a letter from the City of Ceres regarding animal control services in Stanislaus County.
I'll gladly refer that to the Chief Executive Offices.
This board has received the claims as noted on the agenda.
Acknowledge receipt of claims and referred the Chief Executive Office Risk Management Division. Are there any Board and Supervisor reports? Supervisor Monteith?
I thought perhaps you'd like to report your at the CSAC with some of the other members.
Okay, yes, Supervisor Monteith and Supervisor-elect Chiesa did go to San Diego for the annual CSAC conference. The CSAC is the State Association of Counties. All 58 counties were there, and it was, we discussed a wide variety of issues. Particular interest was the state budget and the impacts upon the counties, which could be severe. The state, as you know, will be out of money sometime in February. I don't know what that's going to mean to us, but I could assure you that the impacts could be substantial. Governor Schwarzenegger was there and spoke to us at one of the meetings. He said that he would not support the state taking any of our Prop 42 money, which is the sales tax on fuel, or borrowing any money through the provision in Prop 1A. Although that's what we wanted to hear, I don't know if that's going to be the case or not. The governor blames the legislature for the state financial problem. The legislature blames the governor, and we're caught in the middle. Overall, though, it was a good conference. We discussed so many issues, agricultural policy, energy, budgets. And it's one thing that it's very clear in the going to these meetings that we're all have similar problems, and we're all very concerned about our budget and what next year is going to bring. It is certainly going to be a very difficult year next year. Supervisor Grover?
I have a couple things. One is, during this meeting I received a note that the network is down, and people aren't being able to make their property tax payments. So, Rick, I wondered if maybe during your report you might have suggestions on how our staffs may handle calls that come in, and what the recommendation from the county would be if that doesn't come back up, because I guess there's some concern about SBT getting that back up. And December 10th is a real critical time for that.
I would assume, and it's always troubling to assume anything, but I would assume that this is a short-term downtime. The December 10th date is the December 10th date, so property taxpayers do need to meet that deadline, whether you can do it online or not. We will work immediately with SBT. Stan, can you contact them and find out what's going on? And we'll endeavor to get that back up before the end of the morning today, so that our property taxpayers have the opportunity to pay online. Failing that, please call the Treasurer Tax Collector's office if you need to make other arrangements, and they can navigate you through the process.
Good. Okay. Second thing, and I thought it was pretty interesting. Yesterday afternoon, coming downtown, National Public Radio had a piece on the recount of the elections in Minnesota, and the fact that through millions of votes, the count changes. And that there's a physical law of quantum physics that says when humans are involved, there will be changes. And I liken that to the fact that I took part in a partial recount last week of particularly the Measure S vote as a member of the Measure S committee. And I thought it's worthy of reporting back here as this role, since the elections office is so important to all of us. Through the discussions and negotiations, County Council Doreen and CEO Robinson were included as representing the county, not representing the Measure S, just to make sure that the integrity of the county was maintained also, and I thought were very helpful. The long and short of it is we wanted to focus, because it was expensive, it was a $6,000 day for one day, we wanted to make sure that there was a likelihood of movement if we continued forward. And so we focused on the 1,400 ballots that had not been counted because of lack of registration or something along those lines. Through six stations, we were able to look at about half of those in the first morning. And I know I saw 1/6 of that amount, and there were two that were certified that hadn't previously certified of a couple of hundred. And so that only means that they could have been counted if we had went forward, not that was a change of a vote. It was only that they were able to locate them. The other ones that we focused on were the 7,400 undervotes, which are votes that didn't record either yes or no, and no human eye had ever looked at them. It's just the machine had done the count. So we picked out, I think it was the 8 precincts that had had the highest number of undervotes, just to do a hand tally on those and see if there was movement. And the reality was I don't think that there were any movements on the undervotes. In a couple of the precincts, there were movements in the yes and no, one count, one way or the other, but not in the undervotes. And so at that point, we determined that it looked like the integrity of our system is really good, very little movement. Some of the consultants that we hired said they had not seen very many elections offices that functioned better than ours. It was right at the top in terms of what they've seen up and down the state. I need to say that the elections staff persons were very professional and very courteous and helpful, and I think the registrar is very fortunate to have that election staff there. So a couple things. Bad results on Measure S, but I think good results on looking into our elections office.
Sure. Okay. No hanging chads then.
No hanging anything.
Any further board reports? Okay, the legislative and fiscal management report, Mr. Robinson.
Yes, I would like to speak briefly to both the 2008-2009 budget at a local level and at a statewide level, as well as give you just a heads up of things to come in the 2009-2010 fiscal year. First, as most of you are aware, the legislature did go back into session yesterday. No movement to speak of. They are looking at an $11 billion current year problem with escalating deficits the longer it takes for the legislature to identify a viable fix. At a county level, given the uncertainty of the state budget circumstances, we don't have a definitive report for you at this time, except to say that we are expecting that we will be back with you to discuss implications on our community services agency budget, potentially behavioral health budgets, and other related programs that we anticipate will see funding reductions as a result of state actions. Looking ahead, a preliminary analysis done by Assessor Doug Harms indicates that we could be looking at real property assessed value reductions in the 8-10% range for 2009-2010. What that means is reductions in county's general fund in the neighborhood of $8 to $12 million. Additionally, we're anticipating reductions in sales tax resultant from the ongoing recession, reduction of Prop 172 funding, and vehicle license fee funding, all resultant from downturn in the economy. CEO staff working with departments are looking at a number of options. In our department head meeting tomorrow, we'll have some extended discussions about options and alternatives that will allow us to begin to address expected 2009-2010 shortfalls before the end of this fiscal year and as early as January. We are going to be as aggressive as we can while trying to remain true to our commitment to provide core services to the community. And we'll keep you posted as we move forward and begin to develop solutions.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Robinson. We will now adjourn into closed session. Mr. Doring?
Yes, we have conference with legal counsel this morning, anticipated litigation, and this involves one case and is held pursuant to Government Code Section 54956.9, Subdivision C. We do not expect any report out.
This meeting is adjourned.